listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us today here on Get Yourself the Job on LA Talk Radio. I'm Jennifer K. Hill, and you are here today with myself and my co-host, Brandon Maslin, and our incredible guest, Amy, who will be joining us here in a moment. Before we get into today's show, I want to take a moment to share a couple of things. One, if this is your first time joining us for Get Yourself the Job, what we do here every week is that we take an all-encompassing view, a 365-degree look at everything you want to know, from how to land your dream job, how to prepare for finding it, and even in today's episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about culture and negotiation. We always welcome the feedback from our listeners and viewers out there, and actually live during the show, if you'd like to interact with us, please do feel free to pop on to LA Talk Radio's Facebook page, and we do the best that we can to address any comments. And in fact, that's how today's show was birthed, is one of our listeners, Steve, had said that he was interested in hearing about negotiating. So we wanted to always offer our listeners what interests them. So today, before we introduce you to our guest, I do want to thank our sponsors, the people over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, and they can be used for temporary services, normal executive search, as well as payrolling services. So please do keep them in mind for all of your recruitment needs. So without further ado, I'm going to let my friend and fabulous co-host here, Brandon, introduce our guest, Amy, who's here with us today.
Thank you, Jennifer. So honored to be here, and as always, so we've got Amy Zuckerman. Amy, I've known for a long time. We've partnered together on a few things. I'd consider her a friend. She's someone I talk to. And even during her professional engagement, she would always ask me about my personal life. We talked about her personal life. I'm sure she's going to talk about her two amazing sons. And, you know, she really is the embodiment of this idea of professional identity I talk a lot about, which is we shouldn't just bring a part of ourselves. We should bring all of ourselves to what we do. And I don't know many people who do that better than Amy Zuckerman. And you'll find that out shortly. You name a luxury brand, she's been there. But most recently, it's Godiva Chocolatiers, where she's at now as a chief people officer. Before that, she was the head of human resources at Salvatore Ferragamo. She was at Genesis Direct, and she was also at a company called Escada. So lots of luxury goods. She's got a BA in psychology, organizational psychology. So she takes a very analytical approach. She talks about in her bios how important happy, productive employees are and to appropriately reward them for their contributions. And she certainly can talk about today how people can ensure they're valued, but also the importance and the responsibility of an organization and its HR function, perhaps, to advocate for their employees and value them. I will tell you this. Amy is someone that if she takes the time to focus on you, you feel like $1 million. There's not many people in the world that I know who have that unique talent. Amy's one of them. So my friend and a time confidant, I'm happy you joined us, and thank you, Amy.
Thank you. I hope I can live up to that. So thank you so much. I'm honored to be here, honored to speak with you, and happy to answer any questions that you have about any aspect of getting the job, negotiating, and what it takes to be successful. And sometimes just as importantly, where you can get caught up and not be successful. So I think that throughout my career, what I've really learned, and Brandon knows this, he's heard me say it 1 million times, you have to be passionate. And that it comes down to being passionate and about what you're doing, about where you're working, and about the people you're working with. So above anything else. So I think that's the price of entry. And from there, it all comes very naturally. So that's a starting point.
That's perfect. And Amy, can you talk? You just have such a cool, obviously, career and where you work. Can you talk about, we can start with Salvatore. We can go back. Can you just talk to us a little bit about your journey through HR and maybe some of your companies?
Sure. So when I think of Ferragamo, I spent 19 years there. And really, I people still tease me that my last name is not Ferragamo, although I like to think it is. And it's still really part of my heart and soul. And so when I talk about passion, really being passionate about the brand and the company, Brandon has challenged me to write a book about the culture of the Ferragamo family and why that business is so successful. And I really do believe that's why I stayed for so long, because I was ingrained in that business. And as an HR professional, to really want to be part of the business, not just to be a person who's outside of the business, but to partner. And a lot of people say that tritely, I'm an HR business partner, but to really mean it, to wake up every day and want to help not only the business be successful, but for the people to be successful at the same time, and to have that balance. It's always about the balance between the people and the business, and to love the business, to walk into any one of the stores, to love the product, to be in a factory, to really live and breathe. And for me, that was Ferragamo. Now it's Godiva. I was just in our plant 2 weeks ago, smelling the caramels, my favorite, the chocolate being made. And you have to really live and breathe whatever it is in whatever role you're in, and to really have the most positive impact.
Very good. Well, in the people side and being an HR partner, it does seem kind of trite of what does this actually mean? Because you hear about so much dissatisfaction in the workplace. A lot of people feel angry or frustrated, but they just feel misunderstood. And so I think before we get into today's main topic of negotiating and how do we spend 19 years at an organization, how do we negotiate those higher roles that really drive our passion and make us want to stay there, let's talk for a moment and pivot first about perhaps knowing if something isn't the right fit. It's like anything, you know, most of the time, if we're in any sort of relationship, whether it's romantic, professional, friendship, you're only going to stay in a relationship for 19 years if you love it, if there's something there, like you just said, if you're passionate about it. So let's talk for a moment, like, how do you know when something is a place worth staying 19 years and worth negotiating and worth really, you know, climbing up the rungs of that ladder versus leaving something when it's not the right fit and just trusting your own intuition and instinct that maybe the people don't matter and that it actually is available. It actually is possible to have a business relationship where you feel honored, respected, and known. So could you talk about that for a moment?
Sure. And I think you're right. I think you hit it. I think it's some of it is intuition and some of it is in your gut, and what works for you may not work for me, may not work for Brandon. So it's very different for each of us. And starting even with, we have a formal intern program. And even with the interns, what I will say is go with your gut and find what you're passionate about and find a fit, and always work harder than anybody else. So it's really about finding what works for you, and what that could be, a big organization for some where you're very specialized, and a small organization, a startup for others, where you're involved in a lot of things and there isn't a lot of structure and you have a lot of autonomy. And that's very, very different. And people know, and you have to listen to those cues. And it starts even, well, when there's in-person interviewing again, or even over Zoom interviews, you can tell, you can sense, you if you listen, it's there. If you're not feeling that connection, that's your first sign. And when you walk in and you start having those conversations, and if you're asking questions and if you're not getting the answers that you're comfortable with, and then you look to try to resolve, and there's always someone there you should ask. I always tell people the last place I want to hear about something for the first time is during an exit interview. So there's always someone to speak to. So you shouldn't give up right away. I think you have to try to make it work. But really, interview process, in a job, try to make it work. But life is short. And if you're miserable and you're miserable in your role, then it doesn't make sense to stay. So you're not going to be successful, because there is something called, go back to psychology, self-fulfilling prophecy. And if you're unhappy, that will come to fruition. And so, yes, back to my Ferragamo days, I stayed for 19 years because I loved it. I loved every second of it. And I cried hysterically when I made the decision to leave. Brandon knows this for a fact. But it was a challenging decision to make, because then you say it's time for that personal and professional growth, and then you weigh and balance all of these different considerations. So again, back to trusting your gut, weighing all of the things, but never let fear guide you. Never, ever let fear guide you.
I so agree with that, Amy. And, one of my teachers said a long time ago, you know, if you're ever going to do anything, leave any relationship personally or professionally, do it out of love, not out of fear. If you're doing it reactively, anything you do reactively is going to have a boomerang effect. That's what reactive. You imagine pulling that boomerang back and then boom, you're like, why am I miserable in the next job and the next one? Mm-hmm. Because exactly. You made the choice out of fear. So I think that's so important that you highlighted that. Brandon, what are your thoughts, my friend?
Well, one thing that the word family comes to mind with Amy for a variety of reasons. And the one thing I'm wondering is, from an Amy, if she can speak to the unique challenges or advantages of working for a family-run business and, you know, even founder-run business, right? So there's a duality. There's family-run business is one thing, founder-run business is another thing. And then in the intersectionality, Amy, you mentioned crying your eyes out. And you know, one of the things that I know is near and dear to you is your family, for example. So if that played a factor in what drew you to Salvatore Ferragamo.
There's a whole lot there. Okay, so let me start with, I think that when you work for, everybody reports to somebody. No one doesn't work for most of us. 99% of us work for somebody. And that's all part of deciding what works for you. So when I was at a European luxury brand, if somebody came in from a domestic company like a Ralph Lauren or a Coach, which is now Tapestry, I would say to them, think long and hard if you're comfortable being the subsidiary where you're really implementing the strategy, not determining what the strategy will be. And when it's somebody's name on the door, like Ferragamo, and I reported directly to the son of Salvatore, his name was Massimo, when it's somebody's name on the door, you don't have the final say. You have the ability to persuade. And if you're lucky, you have that relationship where you have a lot of negotiating power and you have that ear. But you don't ultimately have that final say. And you have to be comfortable with that. So I think that's an important perspective. But in reality, we all report to somebody. There's a board of directors. There's there's laws. So you just have to be comfortable. Family-owned business, if it's a big business, if it's a privately held business, if it's a publicly held business, it's following and finding what's right for you.
So Jennifer, I know you want to, and Amy, thank you, because you talked a little bit about that negotiation. So Jennifer, what question do you have maybe to kick us off around negotiation?
Yeah, so I think negotiation is something that is an under-discussed topic. It's something that we all need in every aspect of our life. I forget where I was. I was traveling somewhere. Oh, it was so silly. I was in the Maldives a week or two ago. And, you know, they were going to charge some exorbitant amount, like $120 to go evening snorkeling for a half hour. And I was like, wait a second, you know, half hour evening snorkeling, what's the difference between that and an hour? And they said, it's the same price. And I said, okay, let's hit pause here. Tell me why it's the same price for a half hour of snorkeling versus an hour. And, you know, immediately they're like, okay, let's cut the cost in half. And I think what we don't realize in life is that everything to some extent or another is negotiable. I was lucky enough to be interviewing Mark Victor Hansen and his wife, Crystal Dwyer Hansen, a couple of weeks ago on another show. And they wrote a beautiful new book called Ask. And the point is, if you don't ask, you don't get. So my question to you in this moment, Amy, is how do you know when the timing is right to ask? Or is the timing always right to ask for that raise or that promotion that you've always wanted? And then we'll talk too about how to negotiate once you're actually just in the interviewing process trying to come into the organization, and when to negotiate and when not to.
So it's a great question. And I think it comes back to intuition. And I say that a lot. When I first started at Ferragamo, 19 a million years ago now, and I, for personal reasons, and here it is, Brandon, you were waiting for it. Here it is. My older son was born with a health condition, and it was important to me to work 4 days a week. because he had doctor's appointments, and I knew that I could get everything done in 4 days a week. And it was important for me to convince Massimo Ferragamo, who never heard of such a thing, that I could do this job as the head of HR in 4 days. And so a lot of people said, don't say anything. Don't say anything until after they offer you the job. And I said, no, absolutely not. That's not transparent. It's not the way you start a relationship. If you really want to have an honest, truthful relationship, it has to be transparent. And so I approached it with, this is important to me. This is why it's important. And I understand if that's not acceptable for you, but it's non-negotiable for me. And here are all the reasons why. And what he said was, okay, I completely being family oriented, I completely understand. And then I followed up and said, here's how it works. In 6 months in the United States, it's employment at will. I'll write my own offer letter. There was no head of HR. I'll write my own offer letter. In 6 months, if you're not happy with how it's going, I'll leave. You can fire me. We will part ways. It's okay. And he laughed and said, okay, well, I like that. That's why I need you. This is why we need you in the organization. And 6 months later, he forgot about it. I went to him and I said, remember this piece of paper? We said we'd touch base. And I said, I just want to check in. How's it going? And he said, there's a problem. And I said, what's the problem? He said, I miss you on that fifth day. So really at that point, I knew it was the right place for me. I had his support. There was never anything that got done. In fact, I was more committed to getting everything done because I had that flexibility and because I had that trust. So honesty, transparency, it all comes back to developing that relationship.
You were right. I was waiting for it. But it's just such a beautiful story. And it's so, you know, when we talk about negotiation, it's what matters to us. It's not just salary. It's not just title. There's the totality of it. And for you, it was your son. But I love that balance, that honoring of the family being the intersectionality. Also, the I'm not just asking, I'm going to give you something. Here's a 6 month out, right? I'm going to be, and I do think transparency and honesty are so important. I was just negotiating for a car. My inner lawyer came out and I was fighting with the guy. And he's like, listen, I already talked to this other guy who said, just give you whatever you want. We just need to. And I was like, I believe, like, I could tell, like, that there was a jerk in a situation. It was clearly me because I had my lawyer up. And I was like, oh, you know, you can always see when someone's authentic, when they're inauthentic. At least I can. And a lot of other people can. And so I love that story. That's the car buying. But every job I ever got, same thing. Here's all my limitations. Here's my reality. If you can handle it, great. If you can't, that's okay. But I love that story of honoring family.
Go right ahead, Amy.
No, I was just going to say, and your point is a good one, because what's important to you is different than what's important to me. And so it's not always compensation, and it's not always, it could be flexibility, especially in this time of COVID or the pandemic. And it's very important to understand what it is that's important. And it's the same with recognition. So in negotiation, it's really important to understand what are the key things that are important on both sides.
You are 100% correct, as you usually are. And I love this. Sorry, Jennifer, but just nerding out on negotiation as such a good point of this. I know I'm using car buying, but at the end of the day, they decide how much money they make on how many units they sell. They could care less about cost. The only motivating factor for this guy was cost. So we had so much wiggle room because all they need to do is get the car off the lot. And all I need to do is negotiate. And it's just a great example of once that was established, we both explained our motives. There was no way we weren't going to make a deal. And it's I think that's true in jobs and life. And I think you're so right that we assume someone else's motivation without actually understanding it. Jennifer?
Really great points. I think that understanding another human being and understanding their needs and wants and yours without the sense of entitlement, I think that's where in all negotiations, whether you're negotiating a car, a snorkel, or a job, it doesn't matter. Any one of those situations, if you come in with a sense of entitlement and I'll show you, it's going to be a completely different story. And you also have to know your audience. You know, I was recently listening to the book, Brandon, from Dr. Nate Ruggiero, who we had on the show last year, Seeing People Through. And he talks about how each one of us is like a condominium, with on the bottom floor is like how you relate to the world, and that's your go-to. And on the top floor is where when you're interacting with somebody who is the complete opposite of you, there's going to be a disparity in your communication. So I think that, yes, transparency is critical. And the second thing that you need to know is, who are you speaking to? What is their style of communication? You know, for example, if you have a car guy or a human resources person, and I've seen this happen in recruiting, where they're very pushy and they're like, you have to accept the job today. And if you don't accept the job today, it's over. Kind of like that car guy mentality. That can really turn the job seeker off. And so it's about finessing and really taking it to the next level of understanding who is the person you're speaking with. And what I've found as a recruiter in many years of doing this is that often whoever the hiring or recruiting person is in charge of hiring, that is a reflection of the greater culture of the entire company. So if you get somebody who is like, wham, bam, let's get this done, that's probably a top-down thing, because obviously the CEO hired that person for a reason. So I would love to know your thoughts, Amy, on kind of how to ascertain when you're negotiating who it is you're negotiating with, and truly how reflective that is or not of the organization that you may be being hired for.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because when I interviewed here and I came through the process and I met the CEO, and I remember as she toured me around the office, and the person who was the head of talent acquisition said, "I know it went well. She took you on the tour." And I said, "Oh, that's so funny." And it was true, because that was her hint to everybody that if she took somebody on the tour, that meant that, and she wanted to move very quickly, and that was her style. She wanted to move quickly. And that's part of the culture. So it really, every little piece of the process was a movement and a sign. And you're right. So if as a candidate going through the process, it was really interesting, because as you think through, if somebody puts the stop and says, just wait one minute, I just need to speak to XYZ person, or I just need the weekend to think about it, or I just want to consider this, or can I ask you a little bit about, you know, the it's a lateral move, or can you reconsider the bonus percentage, or those kinds of things, then the question shouldn't be yes or no. The question is, what are you concerned about? Really, so that you get to, from this perspective, from the HR perspective, so that you're really solving the need rather than just throwing, let's say, money at it. And you're giving that person the time. The other thing that I always say is, as an organization, I never want to rush somebody, because I want them to make the right decision for them. So in your example, it doesn't do anybody any good to push someone into making that decision, because it has to be the right fit for everybody.
I love it. I like that that question when someone says, give me a weekend, just finding out, so what is it that you're gonna be thinking over the weekend, right? Getting that extra thing. It's so often money is the thing that I think a lot of times we negotiate for, because something's missing. We're like, if you're going to ask me to do this, I want to get the most amount of money out of it. And, you know, if someone's leaving their job only for money, one thing I learned about as a recruiter, be wary of how long they're going to stay in your new job. Because I'm telling you this right now, they'll probably jump. I didn't like you can make a lot of money as a recruiter, just taking someone, placing them for a year and a half, taking them out of that job, placing them for a year and a half. That was not my style. I really did have a passion for taking someone and having them stay, helping them find, quote unquote, their dream job. And I certainly have that as an executive coach. So I love that you talk about that. What is your actual motivator? And if the motivator's money and they're worth it, pay it. I mean, me and Amy met through a feminist organization, actually. And one of the things you find out in the feminist work, you know, Jennifer alluding to what you did, we used to give out a book called Just Ask For It. You were just reading a book called Ask. And I was like, read this book or don't read this book. But everything you need to know is on the title. Whatever you think you want, whatever you think you deserve, ask for it. And what so often happens is, for men to think they're ready for the next job or the promotion or the raise, they need to be something like 50 to 60% certain. And on average, women need to be somewhere between 90 and 100. And so that's a big delta that actually follows people throughout their careers. And one of the reasons that there's such a delta of, you know, women making 60 cents on the dollar is that you get raises. I mean, we can't ask, as Amy alluded to, because she's a great HR person, you can't actually ask it someone, you know, what do you make and all these other comp questions. But if the person is somewhat honest, you get your raises a lot of times based on how much you've made. And so if you start negotiating poorly in the beginning of your career, first job you get out of college, that can follow you to your 50s and 60s if you don't, you know, adjust for it.
So a couple things on that, Brandon. One thing I want to tie in is what my first mentor in recruiting taught me, which I used every day that I was ever a recruiter. And he said, before we ever work with somebody who's looking to make a move, we ask them these three questions. Do you like your job? Do you like your boss? And do you like the work you're doing? And if the answer to all three of those questions was yes, we would not work with them unless there was some really extenuating circumstance. Like, for example, if their company just didn't provide benefits or there was a long commute, like things that were completely outside of their control. Because then, like you said, Brandon, or, you know, Amy, I think you mentioned it too, you likely won't wind up being at that company down the road. Now, what I do want to address, Brandon, because you were just talking about from the feminist standpoint about, you know, women needing to be 90 to 100% certain and men needing to be 60% certain. What occurs to me, and I know we did a show on this about 3 or 4 years ago with an expert in the field, is that women often are not taught to negotiate, or they're taught that it's wrong. It's wrong to ask for what you want. It's wrong to ask for the corner office or ask for more money, which is why I'm happy, quite frankly, that, you know, these laws are in place to protect employees now, that in many cities and states around the United States, at least, it's now illegal for an employer to ask you, what were you making? What I will say, though, as a default that can be dangerous, and Amy, I would love to get your 2 cents on this, on how to support anybody, because, you know, if you get into race and gender and so many different things where there's a lack of equal pay, I would love to know your advice of how do you handle it? You know, if, say, for example, you have a woman who, you know, could be any color, it doesn't matter, but this woman might be paid $20,000 less than her male counterpart. And yet she goes into the interview. And so she might likely, whether or not she tells the recruiter or talent acquisition person her salary, she might inadvertently ask for $18,000 less than instead of $20,000 more. What is your advice out there? How can people, you know, learn to uplevel their consciousness and be able to receive what they're worth rather than continuing to make 20 cents less on the dollar?
So I think from a company perspective, I think that what my philosophy is to pay what the job is worth. So I think that's the first piece. And so no matter what the person has been earning in the past, and yes, you're not allowed to ask and you're not supposed to ask, and people will volunteer it. And most people will volunteer it. But I think it's most important that you as a company, we are paying people for the value of that job. And, you know, just today I had the luxury of promoting somebody and for the value of, for the job. And it was incredible. It was a 40% increase on their role, somebody who has been with the company for 10 years. And really, from the day I met this person, I said, you are a hidden hero. And I know that you've been working really, really hard for all these years. So I think these are the kinds of things where you have to remove that. Now, not everybody is going to have somebody who's going to think that way. So I think that it has to be people who go in knowing what they can say, what they should say, what they shouldn't say. And some of that's education. But you also want people to negotiate smartly and in a comfortable way. So you said it earlier, you don't want people to come off like they deserve, like they're deserving or they're entitled. And it has to be, here's my value from a skills perspective. Here's what I can do. And when that comp question comes up, they should be transparent and the company should pay them what they're valued at. And I think 90% of the companies at this point, for their own sake, are moving in that direction.
Amy, can you talk about When someone comes in, those initial negotiations we do to get hired, mm-hmm. you know, one thing I found, I would get two people, get a company and a person together. They would both like each other. And the person would negotiate so hard, even after the company threw everything they could, right? They would do like, you know, last and final, that kind of thing. And the candidate would still offer that the company would say, forget it. And I think my theory, and because I work so closely with the employer so often, was that the employers were, they wouldn't say these words, but I feel like they actually got their feelings hurt. They would be like, well, if you don't want us, if you're not as excited about us, we're not excited about you anymore. Or vice versa. I mean, but I saw it more in that. You know, is there any tips and tricks on how you can negotiate hard but still show interest? Because I think people are afraid to negotiate because they don't want to show that they're not passionate about the company they're going towards.
I think it comes down to picking and choosing your priorities as a candidate as well. So both parties, the company and the candidate, pick what's most important to you and then make your list and say, here's what's non-negotiable. For me, it was the 4 days a week. You could have paid me 50% of my salary. It was most important that I had that time with my son at that point in my career. So I think that that's it. It's having the candidate and each person understanding what's most important. If right now it's a hybrid work arrangement, if it's going back, some people want to get back to an office. Some people want to work remote 100% of the time. Some people want benefits. They need the benefits. Understanding what the value of those benefits are. But it does get to the point, like in any relationship, where you know you get to that point and it's like, I want this. Nope. I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. And then that relationship is damaged before it even starts. So I think it's really maintaining that mutual respect.
That's such a good line, right? That line between negotiating hard and damaging the relationship before it starts. I've learned everything I know about negotiation, even though I was a lawyer for a decade. I've learned from my wife that she walks that line beautifully, where she gets everything she's worth. And they're happy to have, you know, and that beautiful watching her. And it's just, she does things that I would never do, but she's like, they can afford it. I'm worth it. And she knows how to walk it right up to that line and then stop. She'll almost make every employer say, you know, last and final. And at that moment, she's like, oh, we're there. But I think that there is some logic, right? I think a lot of employers, and I don't know if this is correct, but a lot of employers expect you to negotiate hard. They expect it. It's part of the DNA. Go ahead, Jennifer.
I was just going to say, Brandon, I would argue that point or counter your point rather that it depends on the role. Like for example, if you're going into any sort of sales role or anything like that, you better be darn certain that you are negotiating top and bottom. You're not accepting the offer. You know, there's something to be said for that. And Amy, I wanted to piggyback on what you shared as well, which is so important. Have a wish list. I think we did a show about this back in January of this year. Create a wish list. What do you want? Write down everything that matters most to you. Maybe it is having a day off a week and working, you know, 4 days. Maybe it's having great 401k or great benefits. Know what matters to you and write it down in your wish list. Then write down a percentage. So the overall wish list, you might have 10 items on it. And one item, for example, in your case, Amy, it might be 30% of your overall wish list of what you need is having that one day off a week. And then maybe 5% is benefits, 10% off is vacation, whatever it might look like, until the total adds up to 100%. Then here's the caveat. Before you ever change jobs, before you ever accept an offer, sign on a dotted line, ask yourself, what percentage of this wish list do I need in order to make a move? Is it 70%? Is it 85%? And when you get that offer, look and reflect, and then that's the perfect bouncing off point to negotiate. Because in Amy's case, you know, money wasn't the factor. It was that day off. In other people's case, it might be education reimbursement. The sky is the limit. But until you know your heart's desire, you're going to wind up making choices that are reactive rather than proactive by actively choosing and participating in your job search.
So we're beginning. I want to keep on going with this negotiation topic. But this is, Amy is kicking off about a 3 or 4 part series we're doing with the heads of the chief people officer, heads of HR that I know, and I had to begin with Amy. So thank you, Amy. And I promised myself I would ask these 3 questions. In your career, at the top of these companies, how have you seen people get hired? How have you seen them get promoted? And when it happens, why have you seen them get fired? I know these are general questions. We're going to ask every single person, but we'd love to hear from you. And what I love about this is you can give, maybe there's something unique about the luxury brands and the way they hire there or the fire or the et cetera. So, yeah.
So your first question for how do you get hired? I may be unique, but I truly believe in natural skills and talents. So I don't necessarily think that you have to have done something before to do it again. I think that I believe in being passionate. I believe in having the ability to learn, being a true leader. And where I sit, it's products, it's luxury products. It doesn't have to be luxury handbags, accessories. So it's consumer goods, it's retail, it can translate. So if you were somebody who worked in customer service, for example, it could have been in hospitality, but you were a leader with those skills. If you're a natural leader, you are a natural leader of people, and that I can't teach you. Can I teach you as a more junior level? Can I teach you to ring a register? Can I teach you how to make a truffle? Probably not yet. But can I teach you to make a shoe? Probably. So those kinds of things, those are skills. Those can be taught. But talents and natural potential, that I can't teach you. So I think to get hired, I think there has to be that fit with the organization's culture. We have four core values and behaviors. When you come in for an interview, there has to be that natural fit. Yes, you have to, if you're at a senior level and you're going to be the CFO, yes, you have to have some of that experience previously. For my role, yes, I need to have worked in HR previously, but do I have to have worked for Hershey, Nestle, or Mondelez before? No, I think I needed to have the core HR skills and the cultural fit. So that's getting hired. To get promoted, I think, again, you mentioned it, it's really being part of the organization, being successful within the organization, adding value. I've said in the organizations I've worked in, it's a leap of faith. It's not so structured that I can promise you, nor would I want to. In 6 months, you'll be this. In a year, you'll be this. In 2 years, you'll get here. Do I provide you with mentor programs and leadership training and encouragement and performance management systems? Absolutely. But you have to continue to perform, continue to contribute, and then you'll continue to be rewarded. So that's that piece. And for getting fired, I think I told you this story, Brandon. I will share. I have my master's in organizational psychology. My goal in life was to help people at work make their lives better. That was my goal in life. When I first got out of graduate school, I sat down my first day. I was at a bank and I was asked to fire 18 people. There was a layoff. The first person who sat in front of me, he was wearing glasses. He had tape on his glasses and I burst into tears. I went into my boss's office and I said, I didn't go into HR to fire people. I can't do it. I can't do it. And he was very wise. And he said, Amy, if you want to work in HR, you are going to have to fire people. And it's not about you in this situation. It's about them. And your job right now is to make it as easy on him as possible. From that learning, what I've learned is if I, as the head of HR, set up programs and policies that allow people to be successful, and I've given them every opportunity to do so, if I've given them the tools and I've given them the opportunity and I've given them every chance to be successful, then I'm not firing them. They're firing themselves. By the time we sit down to have that conversation, there's no surprise. They can't be surprised. I've never had anybody say, I can't believe we're having this conversation. I've had people thank me for having the conversation with them. I did have somebody throw a chair at me once, but that was a long time ago. But I think that really it's about how you help people be successful and throughout the process. And that's when you're not doing it, when you are firing somebody, it's either because they can't do the job or they won't do the job. So if you're finding yourself along that path of not being successful, sit back and say, do I not have the skills or do I not want to? It's one of the two.
Yeah, I love that last piece. You know, you talk about negotiation, but it's okay to it's okay to be honest with yourself and say, whatever it is about this job, there's something I'm missing. And I what I found in my career, and I think for others, when you're honest about that, you actually have the opportunity to stay in the company if you're quicker to say, this isn't my skill set, you know, whatever I'm doing, or it's not sparking joy, but this over here, right? My wife and I just ran into someone the other day who, you know, used to be in PR and now does something completely the opposite, but she was smart enough to say, I like PR, I'm great over here. In my case, I just couldn't schedule or organize, still can't, but I was very good at the job itself. And I said, I know that's part of my job, but if you can hire someone else, I'll take a salary cut so that we can thrive. And then my salary doubled within 2 years because I was willing to sacrifice comp on the front end. And I think negotiation, one of the last thing about negotiation is you mentioned that being aware, right? There's a good saying in law when you're negotiating hard in the settlement, which is, it's lawyers, we're crass, but it's like hogs get slaughtered, pigs get fat. But it's also this idea of like, do you want to live long and be happy? Then be honest. If you want it all, maybe you're not. But my last favorite thing is that idea that I say to my clients all the time, you didn't get fired, you quit. You knew what it was to stay in that job. You refused. You know, that's okay. I love that idea that you mentioned, other than the chair throwing, which sounds terrifying. We should talk about that offline for all the conversations we've had. I think that moment is, you're right. I love that line. I've said it 1,000 times, from good to great. You are stealing people years from people's lives by keeping them in the wrong job. And so negotiating is that honesty with ourselves and what we really want. Jennifer, any thoughts? Because I know we're getting close to time here.
Yeah, I think it's so brilliant what you just said, and I completely concur. I mean, I learned a methodology from a woman named Alison Armstrong years ago called AID, Ask, Insist, Demand, and Enforce. And by the time you terminate somebody, you know, they should be clear. Like, I remember I started using her principles, and by the time that I, you know, had terminated the last three employees I had to fire, they literally said thank you. And that's the HR person's job, though, is to provide all of the things. And like you just said, Brandon, if it's not the right job for you, don't sit there struggling. How many years of our lives do we waste in friendships, professional relationships, romantic relationships? And those are years of our lives. We don't know if we're guaranteed tomorrow. You may as well wake up and love what you do, love the friends you have, love the people you're with, because life is too short. So, Amy, any closing thoughts from you?
No, I agree with you 100%. And when you're happier in what you're doing, then you're more productive and you're more successful. And I think that benefits the company and it benefits you. And it goes back to what I was saying about balance. So it all comes back to balance. So I agree.
Thank you, Amy. I hold you in high esteem. I hope the boys are good. It's one of the few times we haven't gone in a deep talk about your sons and how they're doing.
Later.
All right. I hope they're thriving. She has two remarkable kids who are really, they're like, you know, no matter how far I go in my life, I'm going to measure myself against them and be like, I could probably be doing more. So they're pretty awesome, but they have an incredible role model.
Thank you.
In you, Amy Zuckerman. And I think most people who have ever worked by you, with you, or just talked to you know that. So thank you, my friend. I sincerely value you. Jennifer, this was fun. I love this approach to negotiation, that authenticity, that transparency, and the such. Yeah, that's it. And I'm glad you're back from the Maldives. I don't have to play Where in the World is Jennifer Hill for a week until next week.
You have 1 week left. And Amy, I also want our listeners and viewers to know, where can they connect with you if they're interested in Godiva and they're like, wow, I was really inspired by your journey, or I want to work for a company like yours. Where would they go to connect with you?
LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. Easy to find. So Amy Zuckerman.
Perfect. Well, thank you guys so much. Thank you to everybody who is here with us, who tuned in either now or in the future. We're happy to share that we are now on Amazon Music, on iHeartRadio. You can find us on iTunes as well under Get Yourself the Job. Thank you for all the ratings and comments and feedback. We really appreciate, you know, your participation. It's wonderful when we hear from you via comments on Facebook during the show, and we always do our best to get back to you as often as we can. So we encourage you to continue to tune in here and to join us as we delve into chief people officers and the behind the scenes. It's kind of like the Wizard of Oz. We're pulling the curtain back and sharing the little secrets of what goes on behind the scenes. And so we welcome your feedback. You can also email us at getyourselfthejob@gmail.com. Just the other day, we had somebody ask for sample resumes. So anytime we have resources, we're more than happy to share those with you. So wishing everybody a safe, happy, wonderful rest of your week filled with fulfillment and easy and effortless negotiations in all you do in your life. Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.